Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Jacob and Eric here to preview a World Series, just as you and I were expecting the whole time, Eric.
We may or may not, over the last few days, have been texting back and forth going, if they lose, when they lose, I want to take days off, and we're going to record after that. And then, well, if they win, I guess we could record after, and then it's just like, oh, I don't even know. And like, there were emotions in the last like 3-4 days, and it just all sort of bubbled over Sunday night. But yes, we actually do have a World Series to talk about because the Dodgers have not been eliminated yet. So that's where we're at, and I'm sure we'll talk about it. We have a lot to get into because it was a long series.
It was a long, like 7 games in 7 days. Never do this again, Major League Baseball. Yeah. Never, ever, ever have a 7-game series without days off. This is nuts.
Stress.
Stress. It led to, even with the expanded bullpens, it led to like crazy, like who's going to pitch, every arm is dead situations for both teams. Definitely. If anything, it you could argue it helped the Dodgers, but it certainly wasn't fun for either team. Let's talk about that crazy series. You went right before we went on there. I was talking in the middle of Game 5, before Will Smith v. Will Smith. It felt like every other Dodgers playoff series. It feels like I've ever seen them lose, where they have this ridiculous outburst somewhere in there. In this case, it was in Game 3. But for the most part, just dead bats, kind of unlucky / unfortunate / mediocre pitching, both from the bullpen and from starters. And I was just ready and accepting this season to be over.
Through 4 games, like I would say, yeah, you're right. Like it was hitting all the notes, right? Like, they, to an extreme in some cases, like they literally set a record for the most runs in an inning in any playoff game. It was an 11-run first inning in Game 3, which had the wonderful, there was a wonderful photographer or photograph of the scoreboard where it just said 11 in the, and then there was no other number because the Braves hadn't batted yet. And so that's a fun number, but that was like all their offense for the first 4 games. I mean, roughly, right. They were down 7-0 in Game 2. And then clawed back to within 8-7 with a late rally. And then they were claiming, oh, well, the momentum from that caused them to score. But then they did nothing for like the rest of the games 3 and 4. And you had
I think that is so important in terms of like how I was feeling, certainly in the middle of Game 5, is outside of Nick Wright for the most part, and they battled O'Day a little bit, and they battled Tomlin a little bit, arguably three of the worst or least proven Braves pitchers, if not the three, they hadn't done anything. So like, why would I expect them to do anything against this bullpen, this Braves bullpen, which had been so good, certainly in the playoffs and really all year?
It would be like had the Braves like rallied against like Alex Wood, who was exactly ostensibly like the 15th pitcher. And then they're like, well, our offense is solved, right? Like then, but, and speaking of the bullpen, that like the Dodgers bullpen was bad. Like it was actively
and
bad.
Like, every single one of them. Yeah, it's like, yep, you can't trust you.
you had the Game 4 was a checklist game that put them down 3-1 in the series. You had the Kershaw start, where he was a usual Game 4 Kershaw start in the past, like in past years, not recent past, but. That would be a short rest game, so he was somewhat limited. In this game, he wasn't limited by that, but he was limited by the fact that his Game 2 start was scratched with back spasms, which is like always a red flag. So he was like fine through 5 innings. I was watching like his, I guess the velocity. I don't pay attention to that a ton, but like people overdo it a little bit, I think. But I was watching it because that's like, that can be a sign, right? If he's like feeling
the big
it.
Thing is, there has to be the differential in the fastball and the slider. And for the most part, the slider doesn't get that much slower, but the fastball does. So if the fastball's sitting at 90 and the slider's at 89, 88, he tends to get hit.
And he was mostly fine, I guess, through 5 innings. There was some hard hit balls. So like you could say, all right, I get it. But he was also exactly two times through the order, through fives. If there's a game he's going to be limited and you want to pull it, I pull him, I get it. On the other hand, like, the bullpen was pretty bad to that point, and like, you don't want to overuse them because it's 7 games in 7 days. So I get why he like started the sixth, but then he gave up like a chopper single to Acuna, but then you know, you don't take him out after that. That's totally fine. Freddie Freeman left on left, perfectly fine, leaving him in. But Freddie Freeman like scalded a ball. It was like 105 miles an hour, I think. Technically a ground ball, one that Max Muncy kind of froze on. I think he was expecting like I think it was Chris Taylor. At that point, I can't remember if it was Kiki or Chris Taylor, but to get it, but no one was there. But it was hit so hard that, like, had Mookie Betts not gotten to the ball, like, it would have easily gone to the wall, like a line drive. It was hit that hard. And then after the game, Dave Roberts was like, well, you know, Kershaw gave up like 2 ground balls. I'm not taking him out of there. It's like, well, that was not a right normal ground ball. But yeah, so like, I don't know, it was just super weird. But yeah, so anyway, he left him in, to face Marcelo Ozuna. I remember looking this up because I thought it was a typo. Ozuna during the regular season, again, 60 games, whatever, but he slugged 857, against, lefties, yeah. and also hit like 2 rockets off Kershaw earlier in the game, left him in, hit another rocket this time, I think, for a double. So he leaves like trailing 3-1, and then enter Pedro Baez, who's it seems like his sole purpose at times is to give up inherited runs to Kershaw, and he did. But then, like, you know, this whole time, people are like, you know, what about Bruiser Gratterall? What about this? You can do this, this, and this in the inning. No, every single person they brought in after Kershaw either allowed a run or allowed an inherited run. So literally every choice was bad, and then they got blown out. So at that point, it was
Brewster, like, right?
Oh, it was. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're right.
You and I were talking. It was like, oh, the new Baez.
Yeah, but then, and then, in fairness to Baez and the rest of the bullpen, really, like, they very much redeemed themselves. So we were talking to you right now, so you know this already. But like at that point, it's like, there was not, it was super frustrating, like, just the way they were losing. Yes. And like, it was following every pattern, and then you just, in that, because it was a Kershaw start, like, and then people are like, tend to overreact, like, well, you got to fire Dave Roberts, he's obviously a terrible in-game manager, all this stuff, as if like that's not an organizational wide like philosophy on like how they deploy stuff. And
no, it was really funny. Previewing a little bit, Fox post came to this, a lot of commenters did this, as if Dave Roberts is finally screwing the plan and leaving Urias in there. It's like, Urias was going to give you about 50 pitches no matter what. That was the plan. Like, like, I guarantee you this wasn't him like thumbing his nose at the front office plan and of bringing Kenley or whomever in. It was good for him for leaving Urias in, and we'll talk about that more later. But I was actually generally a pretty big fan of the pitching plans in this series and of Dave Roberts' decisions, except for leaving Kershaw in, which seems to be like just one wrinkle Dave always has, is he wants Kershaw to redeem himself. But how you do it in that spot is what he did with Walker Buehler, which is, hey, I know you're not at 100 pitches yet, but you're looking gassed. Let's take you out and let's get some fresh arms in there, so this game doesn't get away from you.
Yeah, and that's true. Like I was watching part of the post game of Game 7. I tend to like turn that stuff on mute, mostly because I get on like Zoom calls pretty quickly after the game. It takes a couple minutes, but like there's a few minutes where you could like listen, and that's just, it's hard. It's a hard listen on most of these things. But like yesterday was bad. It's like they were like, you know, David Ortiz, Frank Thomas, and A-Rod, like, oh man, finally, like, this was managed from the dugout, not the front.
From the heart,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, come, like, what are you watching, man? Like, get with it, you know? Like, David Ortiz literally played in the majors in 2016. He knows, he has to know enough what's going on that to know like what he's saying is absolute bullshit at on some level. And it's just like, I don't know. It just, that stuff sort of really frustrates me. Like they just, it's the oversimplification of it is just mind numbing, but that's here. That's neither here nor there. But the reason, you know, aside from Urias just being very good, and like just on a very general level, like you're talking about a time where you're going with your best pitchers. Like he is absolutely one of their best pitchers. So like you get why they kept him in that game to close out the ninth inning. But also, Kenley Jansen had worked the two previous days. He was like sort of ready to go if they needed him, but there's also a point where like they didn't necessarily have to go to him. And so I get it. Like that was a perfectly fine decision. But the fact that it was even a choice that Kenley worked his way back into that.
And it's not like this isn't like he's had these before where like, honestly, a good portion of when he won reliever of the month in this season where it's like, he's not letting off runs, but these are in some cases unlucky, like sort of soft liners, but in some cases some really hard hit balls that are just finding the right gloves. That's not what we got. Certainly in game five, we got vintage Kenley.
He came out, he worked. So in the game three blowout, that game was a 15-3 final. I believe it was 15-1 after three innings and the Dodgers didn't score again, but that game was decided. And like Urias went five in that one. And then they just went to all the low leverage guys in the bullpen, which at that time included Kenley Jansen, and he was fine. Like it was like a normal inning, and it was like he wasn't throwing 87, you know, or whatever. He was like, he looked okay, and the stuff was like good. You're like, okay, that he could be usable. And then it got to the desperation time, and they had to use him for game five, right? That was game five. Game five was it was 7-3.
Yes.
And so it wasn't a save situation, so it was like, and it was perfect opportunity, like you know, bottom of the lineup ish and get him sort of back into the groove a little bit, you know, like in a get him, he gets to finish out the game. It's not super high stress because it's a 4-run lead, but my god. He comes out, he's like 93-94. Obviously not all of those are cutters, but like he's just dotting it. It's moving, and you're like, oh, like it's kind of like it. I tweeted out something like the shot from Major League Two when Wild Thing comes back, and they're like, oh my god, he's back! Like, you know, like that's exactly what that felt like.
And this is probably hindsight, but like that sort of deliberateness that Kenley has, when especially when he's not on, was not there. He just was like, yep, that's what I'm throwing. Throws it, strike. Next one. It was really cool to see.
Yeah, and then that's just to get through game five, right?
Yeah. Let's talk about Will Smith, because that was the turning point, I think, of the entire series.
Yeah, so I like dumb stuff, like really, I was sort of joking like ahead of the series, like one of the big like things of this series is Will Smith versus Will Smith in a joking way. Like they actually already faced each other last year when Will Smith was the pitcher, was on the Giants. He struck out the catcher Will Smith to end the game. I remember this, and I didn't remember it at the time, but I in the last week or so I remember this. My brother Greg from Maryland was in town, and so me, my brother Greg, my other brother Kelly, all three of us were at that game, and I remember watching that from the end of it, from the top deck, because that's where I parked, and I was we did the time-honored tradition of our dad like leaving immediately like after the game, and we actually, you know, made pretty good time getting out of there, but like I just remember watching the end of that from the top deck, going, oh my god, this is Will Smith versus Will Smith, this is great. And then you know, heading into the series, like, you know, hope it would happen, whatever. It almost happened in was it game four, I believe. Oh yeah. And then that was funny because that game was not close, I believe, at the time, but Will Smith was bad. Like he was letting up a lot, and it got to the point where Will Smith the batter was on deck, and but you knew almost no matter what happened, Will Smith the pitcher, like he, facing Muncy, I guess, that was going to be his last batter no matter what. And he ended up, I think, did he walk him then or do whatever he did? Will Smith, the batter, comes up, and then they made the pitching change, and I was like, no, you know, we didn't get our Will Smith versus Will Smith.
It was close then, right? I think the game was tied at that point, because that was before the Braves had their onslaught in this bottom of the six. Don't quote me on that.
No, I think they're anyway, but like, but the funny part about that was that was like,
no, you're right. It was 6-1 at that point, I think.
Yeah. And so, but like the funny part was Brian Snicker made the pitching change before Will Smith, the batter, was announced, because he was a pinch hitter. He didn't start. And so, like, the Dodgers didn't even have to, like, sub out. So they kept Edwin Rios in against a righty at that point. Will Smith, the pitcher, is a lefty. And they got Will Smith and Matt Beatty to bat with platoon advantage. They didn't do anything that inning. But, like, then Will Smith, the batter, came up later in the inning. So it was kind of funny. So it worked out for the Dodgers in some sense. They just didn't capitalize. But then the next night, Will Smith came in to face Muncy to start, and Will Smith, the batter, was on deck, and there was already one runner on, so you knew, because of the three batter minimum, that Will Smith versus Will Smith had to happen, right? Like, so
He got out of the inning, he subbed him, right? Because I think two outs at that time. Is that right?
That is true. Yes. So. Max Muncy actually had to reach base. But so close. And being Max Muncy with the IE, he took six pitches in that at bat, and he got a walk. And then, like, you know, just the fact that they're facing each other was sort of fun, right? But then you forget, like, the Dodgers are also trailing in the series 3-1, and it's 2-1 Braves at this point in the sixth.
And I'm taking credit for this, because I was chatting with a Braves friend of mine, said, when Will Smith came in, knowing Will Smith was on deck, and I said, if he walks, I think it was 2-0 or 2-1 the Muncy at the time. I'm like, if he walks Muncy to get to his namesake here, it's 4-2 Dodgers. And I was joking at the time, because Will Smith has, for power at least, been hitting righties a lot better. And so I said, oh, I'm just joking. But I wasn't joking, apparently.
you were spot on. I expected that too. Yeah, he was.
Takes.
I did not expect that home run. And, like, it was very surprising. That was a moment, man. Like, that was. You know, the Dodgers ended up winning that game, going away. That's 7-3. They that was a huge thing. Also, if I remember correctly, in that game, the Braves led 2-0 early. And keep in mind, they're up 3-1 in the series. And they almost scored a third run. And then Mookie Betts, like, made a sort of shoestring catch, like, as he's running in. And, like, he made it in such a way that he stayed upright, like, because in a catch like that, a lot of times you can either dive or slide or something. But Marcell Ozuna was on third and decided to tag up. But he committed, like, first, so he had to go back to tag up. But he left too early. But the fact that Mookie stayed upright to throw home made the play close enough to where the Dodgers appealed. And then on replay, it showed Marcell Ozuna left early, so he was called out. So instead of being 3-0, it's a momentum shift. And I believe Seager homered immediately after that. So that was great. Everyone was sort of talking about that as, you know, momentum, whatever. But it definitely, like, everyone was fired up after that defensive play. But it turned out to be, like, the worst of the three great Mookie Betts defensive plays in the next three games. He was so good. He didn't hit much in the series, really. Just generally speaking, but he made such an impact. Like we talked about in so many other ways. That's crazy. How absolutely good he is.
He did on base 387 by the end of the series. Just wasn't waiting for anything beyond that. So
yeah. Yeah, he was, like, fine, right? But it was just, man, what an impact. So he made the a leaping catch in game six to rob Marcell Ozuna of an RBI double. It wasn't going to be a home run. But then Freddie Freeman in game seven, he robbed him of a home run. Like, he went over the wall. It's like, I think you texted me this. Oh, no, someone else did, but I listened to it later. I want to get the quote right because Rick Monday was wonderful on his end of it. He said, does he have a trampoline out there? And then he said, he's got wings in his feet. And then, it was just really funny. Like, but man, he looked so good. So yeah, those were huge plays and like defensive, like plays sort of change things. Yeah, I don't know. It was
crazy. Really interesting to compare how I felt in game 5 versus game 7. And it's not just that, oh, they won a few more games, and therefore it's a closer series. They just, how they were winning, how they were battling back. They were down. It felt like every game but game 3. I don't know if that's actually true. It's probably true. and they just kept battling. And I had this sort of serenity that if they had lost in game 7 and they were losing kind of throughout that game, I was not going to be happy, but way better feeling than if they had lost in game 5. Just yeah, how the team looked.
Yeah, I agree with that. The Braves scored first in for the first 5. And then also game 7. And but like games, you know, once the Dodgers win game 5, you're like, okay, you have Walker Buehler going, so like there's a lot of confidence in that, right?
Yeah, and he lived it. Up to it.
Yeah. and like the thing with him, it's like, okay, he's gonna be really good, but like
he hasn't been able to throw his breaking stuff basically all right. playoffs.
Right. And he said like it's affected him on the cutter, but it's clear like he's not throwing as many curves and stuff. And so he was like not all fastball, but fastball was his thing on Saturday. And he was just pumping it in there, man. Like, but the thing is, you know, he's been limited by the blister. Not so much that he's had to come out because of the blister. It's more like they're managing it, and he's been wild. Like he walked 4 against the Padres, and then 5 against the Braves in his first start, and that was his career high. And he went 4, 4, and 5 innings in his 3 postseason starts. But this one, he walked 0, and he went 6, and then you could make a case that he could have went longer, but they took him out after like 89 pitches because Dave Roberts' words was he emptied the tank. Both of them said, Buehler and Roberts said, look, he was gassed. It took all that he had. He had a couple of innings, the Braves. So the Dodgers on Saturday, speaking of scoring first, they jumped on Max Fried, Corey Seager again, homered, and then Justin Turner homered. And they scored 3 in the first, and then that's all they ended up scoring that game, which was another sort of weird thing that happens.
And it's one of the things where the old, like, that story is not new. Like, we're used to that, but the old teams give up that lead.
yeah. And like, yeah, it was just the Braves, after the Dodgers scored those 3, like, they loaded the bases with nobody out. And then Buehler just went all fastballs to he struck out Austin Riley Austin Riley and Nick Markakis, and then he mixed it up a little bit to get Christian Pache, and that was a huge turning point. They didn't score at all after loading the bases with nobody outs, and then he ended up not giving up a run. And then, you know, all these sort of decisions, right? It's 7 games in 7 days. The last couple days, you're like, okay, this is where you start to pay the tax because your pitchers are tired. You've used a bunch of them. Game, Buehler goes 6, so you're like relatively fine there. Oh, and I forgot to mention, when the Dodgers won game 5, Dustin May, like, got a chance to actually start. And, like, it was a planned start. It wasn't like you know, using him in a short thing, but he was just bad. Yeah. Like he gave up a run. And
I think expecting him to go 5 would have been sort of miraculous, just his usage in the postseason. But they were hoping for 4, for sure.
And he was just off. I think he threw like 55 pitches. So they pulled him after 2, and then they had to cover those innings, and they did. You know, they did. Like, I believe Blake Treinor worked 2 in that game. He was the workhorse of the 3, the last 3 games. He ended up pitching in all 3. He did 2 innings that game, 1 inning in game 6. He actually gave up a run. Well, here's why everyone like freaks out over every pitching change is because, oh, why'd you pull Walker Buehler? He's cruising, you know. But obviously, like, he was clearly gassed. That's why they did it. That came out after the game. But like, if you just like, just take a step back and like sort of realize that might be the case. Like, but it did look good right away because Buehler gave up a triple and a double to his first two batters. And it's like, and that's a, it's a 3-1 game at this point. And you're like, oh no, this is like going to be bad. And, but then nothing like after that really Pedro. And then it was like, it was just sort of the standard, like Pedro Baez for the eighth, Kenley Jansen for the ninth, and they closed it out. And like Kenley, you're like, okay, this is going to be weird because it's his second day in a row. Is his stuff going to be there? And like, and he was facing like a good part of the order. And then he got him out in six pitches. It was like, what? Like, oh, okay. Like that was not expected at all, but this game's over and it's tied now. But then talking about Trinan again, he goes two innings in game seven. And like, he was a beneficiary of not only the Mookie Betts home run robbery, but also with, so let's see.
In our,
this wasn't his fault. Yeah, go ahead.
In the brother, podcast brethren, Talking Chop podcast, this was the play of the game for them. And I think as a Dodger fan, you don't want this to be the play of the game because it's not. Justin Turner looks pretty good in it, but it's not the Bellinger home run or the Mookie catch. But I think this was kind of the turning point in the game.
I have to confess here, I did not see the play live because there's a thread on True Blue LA this morning talking about Dodger superstitions. I didn't put this in there, but like I actually had to go. I had to go to the bathroom, and I was sitting on the throne, listening from the other room, and one like did they just like get two outs? Like I was trying to figure out how it happened in my head, and it did not. I did not concoct exactly how this was going to happen. So it's second and third. So it wasn't Trinan giving up those runners, like. Going back, so Dustin May started game seven again, but you knew this time was going to be a short thing. He was also bad. he could not throw strikes. They ended up scoring only. He allowed, it was like walk, walk, single for a run to start the game. And then he didn't give up a thing. He got a double play. So he's out. Gonsolin comes in, who was going to be this quote-unquote starter. He was like okay. He gave up a home run, but then he was kind of bad too. And then his I believe this was the fourth inning maybe. And he gave up walk, walk, single to start the inning. And then, so it's 3-2 Braves at this point. And it's another thing where this could be a big inning and they sort of turn this game around and take it. But Trinan comes in and I can't remember if the he wild pitched them over or what, but it became runners on second and third. With again,
it was tripled and wild pitch, I think. Is that right?
No, double, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Or no, because it was two runners. So it was like, it might have been single walk or something like that. I can't remember. No, it was walk, walk, single. That's what it was. Because, and then the single made it, got the run home. So it's first and second. And then the wild pitch made it second and third. So Trinan comes in. He gets, it's like a shifted, somewhat shifted infield, almost, not quite, but like ground ball, like right to Turner. Dansby Swanson going home. Turner throws home. They get a rundown. Will Smith, and then what was this? Back to Turner in the rundown. And then Turner, like Superman, dives at Dansby Swanson, tags him on the foot. And then, like, is like on the ground, gets up on his knees, and notices Austin Riley trying to go to third, throws to Seager, and he's out by like a mile. And they got two outs out of that. It's like an absolutely shocking, like, double play. And then Trinan got out of the inning with nothing. And the Braves ended up, they actually didn't get a hit after that in the game, which is wild. But, like,
yeah, one more base runner, a walk.
Yeah. And so, like, that was crazy. But yeah, that. So yeah, again, didn't see it live. Immediately went to find the highlight once I was finished with my business, and yeah, so that was kind of an amazing play. I don't remember. It wasn't as inexplicable as the JD Drew and Jeff Kent getting thrown out at home plate on the same play in the 2006 NLDS. But it was like at that level where you're like, really? If you're a Braves fan, you're like, really? Like, that's how this is going to happen? Like, so it was very odd.
Yeah. Hard time keeping it all straight, that's for sure. Give me those days off again.
So, like, Corey Seager, right?
Yep, that's the last thing I wanted to talk about before we maybe moved on.
Yeah. So he hit a home run in the game three burst. He also hit a home run late in game two when they rallied. He hit two home runs in game five, and then the home run in game six. So he five home runs, 11 RBIs in the series. Both of those are NLCS records. The only ALCS that had more was Nelson Cruz. I think he was 6-13 in 2011. Corey Seager was kind of bad in the postseason, like overall, like in his career before this year. And like, that was part of the thing with him and Cody Bellinger. And like, they're both like doing pretty good. Like, well, Seager's doing great. Right? Yes. Like this postseason, right? He already has like Dodger record. Part of this is because they play longer, but still it's a huge thing. Six home runs, 15 RBIs. That's more than any Dodger in any single postseason. So like, he's on fire, and it's like a continuation of how great he was this season. Cody Bellinger was like off and on during the season, but like, he sort of picked it up, and like the sort of Dave Roberts is praising like his patience after game seven. So game seven, they still, like, the Dodgers are still trailing in the sixth, 3-2. They started Jock Peterson in game seven against a righty. It was Ian Anderson, and then when they brought in, I believe he faced Tyler Matzek, if I'm not mistaken. Jock did. And then they thought fastball, looping curveball, I believe, was Dave Roberts' explanation. Like, Jock can handle that. He was fine to stay in, picking his spots with Kiki. And then when they faced the next left-hander, that's when Kiki came in. And then
facing Minter.
Yeah, and then so – and Minter, by the way, in game five, right, so it's 3-1 Braves. Okay, now we're going to get the Dodgers' advantage because they have three starting pitchers to go in the next three games possibly. The Braves are on a bullpen game in game five. Their bullpen guy to start the game goes longer than the Dodgers' actual starter. Like, Minter, like, mowed down the Dodgers. It was three scoreless innings, seven strikeouts. He looked great. And so to have Kike hit the home run off him was great. He was obviously like super excited because, you know, he's been up and down. He's great on defense this year, didn't really hit much, but he hit two home runs in the NLCS. In the seventh inning, Cody Bellinger ran a count full against Chris Martin and then just absolutely crushed the ball. to give the Dodgers the win, basically, like they pulled it out. But that was a huge moment, and like, he's looked really good. And then the only like real concern, like, we're going to talk about it more today, I think, when the media stuff happens. No one seemed that concerned about it last night, but like, Cody Bellinger during celebration, he hit Kiki Hernandez so hard, like on a shoulder bump thing, that he popped out his right shoulder, like this, and they, like, the trainers like popped him back in. Like, first of all, ow, like how does that happen? But like, and he stayed in the game, and so they didn't seem like worried about it.
Quick WebMD research a bunch.
Yep.
From what I can tell, and this is probably wrong, he's dislocated his shoulder before, and my understanding is that the first dislocation hurts a lot and can sideline you for a while, but subsequent ones, which are more common after, are quicker recoveries.
So he's,
I'm going,
like,
to go with that because that's optimistic and I'm hopeful.
So he's like Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon?
Yeah, I think
minus the future anti-Semitism or whatever. That makes sense. But
so
like,
I'm hoping that's the case. I feel like what I was reading, like the Dyer on shoulder separations, he wouldn't be able to play defense thereafter. So I'm hoping that that is the case. But I'm sure it'll get brought up a lot today.
I think it's one of those things. If it was his left shoulder, that probably would be the case because he couldn't throw.
Right.
But like, since it's his right,
I guess my understanding is even when they pop it back in after that first one, like you wouldn't be able to, for say, raise your hand to catch the last out of the NLCS. Ah. So, but again, it's all in ranges. It does depend if he's popped it up before, which I believe he has, the right shoulder. So I'm sure you'll all find out. They didn't even seem fake concerned. You know, sometimes where they're trying to cover it up, right. They seemed legitimately like, yeah, it's fine. So I'm hoping that's actually the case.
Well, to your point, like, so it was brought up on the Fox post game.
Yep.
Both Cody Bellinger and Kike Hernandez talked about it. We talked to Kike in the Zoom thing, and it didn't come up. And then I had my hand raised to talk to Dave Roberts. It's a busy thing. I ended up not getting called on, so it actually didn't come up in the Dave Roberts thing either. So like that was part of it. Like it just didn't get. And I think it was one of those. If it was like a, we're gonna check on Cody. Like Roberts would have like mentioned that, I'm sure. But like we'll I don't know. We'll find out today, I think. But it was just kind of a sort of weird situation.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There's a lot more we can talk about in that series, but we do have to move on. This, as you can tell, you and I are forgetting what game happened, what pitcher who. There's a lot to cover. We're both still. You
were barely still covering it. Yeah.
Yeah, you were probably still covering this game literally like 8 or 9 hours ago. So we appreciate y'all staying with us. And now we're going to preview the World Series, and we didn't know who we were playing until... One, we didn't know if we were playing, but if we were, we didn't know who we were playing until 48 hours ago, give or take. So I know you and I have been both kind of scraping together research on the Rays, figuring out kind of who is this team. There's the narrative of going into the World Series, which is that outside of one particular hitter, they don't hit a whole lot, but they're pitching, both starting and bullpen are nails, and in terms of how they use their pitchers, it's going to look really similar to how fans hate that Dave Roberts handles his pitchers.
Yeah, and I think to a point where the Rays are even like more particular about it, or like they have the most. I know the Dodgers like have the buy-in to at least from the players. And but the Rays, I think, they're just on board, man. Like everyone's like, whatever. Like, part of it is like it feels reductive to say like they don't have that many starters. They have like a lot of good players, but like it's easier to do that if you're like, you know, on for some people like, you know, different level of players. Like you couldn't. I guess Mookie Betts doesn't apply because he's not a pitcher, but you couldn't, like, it'd be harder to platoon Mookie Betts, right? Like, he'd have to be really slumping. The Rays don't have someone like that who's, like, star power is dictating, like, you know,
well,
how they're...
Yeah. In the playoffs, they do.
Well, that's true. Yeah, so we talked about Corey Bellinger, Cody Seager. So, Corey Seager... 6 home runs, 15 RBIs.
You would think the hottest player in the championship series.
And like the only person with more home runs this postseason is Randy Arozarena with the Rays. He actually only has 10 RBIs, but he has 7 home runs.
gives you an idea.
Yeah, and like, so the best part about Randy Arozarena, so he's a rookie, but he's still going to be a rookie next year. He's 25. He's from Cuba. But so this postseason, he's 382, 433, 855 slugging. That's ridiculous. But like he's just hitting up a storm. 7 home runs, 3 doubles and a triple. But so the best part, so 21 hits in 14 games in his major league career, which was last year with the Cardinals briefly and this year with the Rays, 42 games total, 24 hits in the majors in the regular season. So he is just doing great. Outfielder, yeah, it's just he's the handful, right? Like he's gonna be the guy to sort of have to deal with in the middle of the lineup. They have a number of like decent hitters, but the things we know as of now when we're recording is Tyler Glasnow is starting game one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Blake Snell starting game two of the Braves. Rays' two best pitchers. So that'll be a challenge. Now, the Dodgers haven't announced anything, but it has to be Clayton Kershaw in game one.
I think game one is clear. Game two is you can go one of two routes, and it's legitimately do not know what they're going to do.
It's Scramble City. We'll find out, I'm sure. They might not even say much today because
my suspicion is they will not announce a game two starter, and that it may really depend on how Clayton pitches. Because if he can get deep into the game, not force Dodgers to use a lot of the bullpen arms, a bullpen game maybe start you know sort of quasi opener Dustin May, and then being able to go Buehler, Urias, Gonsolin, or Kershaw 3-4-5 becomes really attractive. You get everyone on full an extra day's rest after a really grueling championship series. You have the bullpen arms to pull off a bullpen game and not have it be this backup plan. But if Clayton does have to leave early for any reason, or they just go through a lot of bullpen arms in game one, your hand may be forced, and it's not necessarily an awful thing to start Walker on 3 days rest, obviously blister allowing.
Yeah. I don't see them starting Buehler at all on 3 days rest. So
we'll see. But if he can, it's really attractive because we actually have off days in the World Series. You're able to go the whole rest of the way, full resting people, and you're able to get two games out of Urias. Now, even if Urias is, say, in game four, a game four starter, or say maybe a game five starter, and they use him in relief somewhere, maybe for some bulk game innings in game two, or maybe he relieves Kershaw, it's not a total loss of if you start Buehler in game three, you're only getting one game out of Urias. I know that's not the case, but being able to get two real fully rested starts out of him is really attractive. But with the way they've been managing a Walker, especially since the blisters come up, but really this entire year, even before that, it would really surprise me, but I don't think it's out of the question.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the question. I don't think they're going to do it. But yeah, I think you're right. I think they're not going to announce a game two starter until either that day or after game one or something.
And even if they knew it was a bullpen game, they're going to do that thing they did for game seven where, who's going to face, who is best able to hit the top three or four batters.
But I think we all know Dustin May starting that game. no matter what, even if they only have plan to have him go one or two innings, which, again, he just threw Sunday, so, that's only 2 days rest. He's probably only, two innings. But I think Gonsolin's, the same thing. I think you almost I don't know. So if you – The benefit of doing the bullpen game in game two is you can use both May and Gonsolin in a shorter burst. Not that that's ideal, but because then you have Buehler, Urias, and Kershaw again.
Yeah.
And Kershaw on regular rest. So and then Buehler in game six. And then you sort of just figure it out. I don't know. No, Buehler game seven, excuse me.
Yeah, and then...
Game six would be the other figure-it-out game, So there's going to be a lot of that. The Rays have Charlie Morton as well, but there's going to be a lot
of
mixing and
matching. Charlie Morton.
Just on a very base level, the Rays have, I think, the stronger bullpen, or maybe the... The Dodgers had a deep bullpen,
it's looked good almost all year, except for Kenley, except for the last few games, and then the first half of that of the NLCS, where they just nobody looked reliable.
I wonder if we talked about this. If it's a matchup thing. I haven't really looked into this, but I wonder if a Jake McGee matches up better against the Rays than he did against the Braves, because they used Jake McGee, but not in like super high level. Like,
and it should be noted, and you know, who knows, maybe the arms are tired, bullpen arms are volatile, maybe they'll look bad in the series too. But one reason why the bullpen looked so bad is that the Braves offense is ridiculously good. And all things told, they actually did a pretty good job handling that really, really good offense. To expect them to just be complete zeros the entire series is probably unfair. It's a little unfortunate for our hearts that they backloaded so many of the good performances, but still looking good. And I think all things told, and facing the Rays with a worse offense, maybe we get that appearance of the regular season bullpen again.
Yep. So I am, we're recording this. I don't have an email. I didn't get a text, but Bill Shaken tweeted that the Dodgers announced Clayton Kershaw starting game one. That might be on like MLB Network or something. I'm not sure exactly where he's getting that, but the Dodgers haven't put it out officially yet, but that's clearly what's going to happen. But yeah, so like, but so that's a thing to look forward to. But like, yeah, it's going to be a fun series. Then you're going to have the, you know, super high payroll against the super low payroll.
The Andrew Friedman series. Yeah.
And like all this stuff. So there's all sorts of like fun little there. It's the Adam Kolarik series, the Edwin Jackson series, if you wonder, but then that could be almost any World Series, 'cause he's played for so many teams. But yeah, it's, it should be pretty, pretty fun.
I did call the NLCS 2017, the Game 5 blowout. I want a series blowout so bad. I have, like, with 2020, my anxiety base level is already so high. And after the NLCS, it's gone. I can't do another one of those. Like, I don't care that it feels sweeter after seven games. And it did feel sweeter. I don't care.
You want to go into, like, game 5. No, let's say game 4. You want to watch game 4 with the Dodgers up 3-0 in the series and not like having to sort of worry
and
about
not
it.
Do what the Rays almost did against the
Yeah,
Astros.
Yeah, right, so the Rays were up 3-0. They had a hard fought series against the Yankees, and they didn't win till like the last inning of game 5 in the ALDS. And then they were up 3-0 on the hated Astros, and then the Astros forced a game 7.
It was really funny how that went from before the championship series to, oh, it's going to be Rays Dodgers. And then it went, oh, it's going to be Braves Rays. Oh, it's going to be Dodgers Astros. No, and now we're back to Dodgers Rays.
Yeah. Oh, and so that's another thing. Like, you know, they expanded the playoffs to shorten season. And yet here we are with the teams with the two best records in baseball in the World Series. That's kind of fun. I saw a stat. I think this is only the fourth time in the wild card era, which is now 26 years worth, that the two best records the best record in each league is in the World Series. So that's rare. It's fun, but yeah. So yeah, I don't know. It's going to be fun, but yeah, there's off days built in, which is great from a psychological standpoint and just from a literal rest standpoint. It should be fun. I do have a Dodgers rewind, even though it's very haphazardly put together.
I'm trying to think if there's. I'm going through my notes real quick, make sure there's nothing else I wanted to preview. If we had more than 36 hours put together, I think we would have had a fuller preview. But sorry, y'all, we are scrapping this together, but we still wanted to do one. No, I think we covered it. I was hoping we had a Bellinger note before we recorded. That didn't happen. But again, I'm assuming he's fine, it will be good to go. So yeah, I think we're ready for a rewind and then questions from Greg.
Okay, so the reason I came up with this player, so Julio Urias closed out Game 7, 3 perfect innings, got the win. There's only been 6 Dodgers relievers to throw 3 innings, closing out the game and getting the win in a postseason game. That's a very specific thing. It doesn't matter that much. But, like, Steve Howe was the last one to do it in the 81 World Series. He allowed a run. Bob Welch also did it in the NLCS in 78, also allowed a run. The only other of these players to do so without you know, without allowing a run, excuse me, is that, excuse me, it was Larry Sherry. So 1959 World Series, that was like Larry Sherry's time to shine. The Dodgers trailed in that series 2-0. They won the last, no, was it 2-0? No, that's not right. I believe, yeah. So, no, they lost game one 11-0. That's what it was. Then Larry Sherry came in all four of the Dodgers' wins. The saves didn't exist back then technically, but he retroactively got two saves and two wins in his four games. He only allowed one run the whole time. He ended up getting MVP. In game six of the World Series, this is the game in question, he pitched the last 5 2/3 innings of that game and won. He didn't give up a run at all. And so he was very good. Two wins, two saves in the World Series to win MVP. That was only their second year in Los Angeles. Larry Sherry, he was only 23 at the time. He ended up pitching almost exclusively in relief throughout his career. He did make 16 starts with the Dodgers, but like they were sort of sporadic. Then I'm just trying to see. I forgot who he actually got traded for later on. Okay. So I should remember this from a couple weeks ago, but when the Dodgers got rid of Larry Sherry, it was April 1964. They traded him to the Tigers for a minor league outfielder, a journeyman minor league outfielder named Lou Johnson, who was one of our Dodgers rewinds a couple weeks ago when he passed away. We talked about him before, but yeah. That's sort of where we're at. And I apologize again, haphazard putting this together. But yeah, Larry Sherry.
As if you've been busy the last few days.
Yeah, I ended up going to sleep last night at like 2 a.m. And then I didn't, because I have stupid old man body. I was up at 6 a.m. this morning and I could not go back to sleep. So I was very angry. Bad.
Well, I've got something to brighten you up, brighten your day.
Yay!
It's time for...
The following advertisement is paid for by the QFC Super PAC.
Every week, Jacob and Eric get questions from Craig. But we have questions of our own. Why do they need Craig to ask questions at all? Why can't they come up with their own questions? Are they even really Dodger fans? Is there anything true about True Blue LA?
I'm Craig, and I approve this message.
Five questions from our friend Craig Minami. Two trivia questions for you to start out. And it's really six, so have fun. Yeah. Following the same theme as the rest of this week's in the playoffs, Eric, name the top three LA Dodgers in walks, stolen bases, and doubles in World Series play.
Okay, so stolen bases, I have to say Maury Wills.
Second with six.
Second. okay, so 77, 78, 70. Davey Lopes.
First with 10.
And then I would guess Jim Gilliam.
Nope.
Okay. What are we at? Walks, stolen bases, and what?
Doubles.
Doubles. Jeez. Okay.
And I was assuming you were sticking the stolen bases there.
I was.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
You know what? I will say Jim Gilliam for walks, though.
There you go. Tied for second with 12.
Okay. And then because he played so many, let's go with Duke Snider for walks.
Nope.
What about doubles?
nope. Reminder that it is LA Dodgers. So I know Duke would have been
LA well. Dodgers. Yeah. Okay, my bad. Okay. So in that case, no. I don't think. Wow, this is bad.
With stolen bases, think just stolen bases and Dodgers. That might get you there.
Yeah. Don't tell me what to think. And I was kidding. So, well, that's. Yeah, this is not making a lot of sense.
I'm going to give you stolen. It's Willie Davis.
All right. Okay. So for doubles, what about Ron Say?
Not on the doubles. There's a lot of ties, and he's not on the list.
Steve Garvey,
tied for second with three.
Justin Turner
tied for first with four.
Let's see. Trying to think. Well, if Justin Turner's on there, what about what about I'm going off book here, but okay. Chris Taylor.
Not you're talking about doubles?
Yeah.
Not locks. Oh. Chris Taylor does not in doubles.
Yeah, let's just for sake of you goading me, I will say Chris Taylor for walk.
Hey, look at that, tied for third with eight.
That's kind of amazing. what about Davey Lopes for walks?
Number one, no ties with 13.
Wow. Kind of mush right now. let's say I need a doubles guy. No, I got nothing. I'm out.
All right.
Sorry.
So we've got Ron Say in second with 12 for walks. And that covers up walks. Gilliam and Chris Taylor were tied for third. You got all the stolen bases. Well, I gave you Willie Davis, I guess. Mm-hmm. Steve Yeager tied with Justin Turner for four with doubles.
Oh, Yeager, damn. Nice.
And then we have Lou Johnson, Ron Fairley, and Maury Wills all tied with Steve Garvey with three doubles.
That's good. Good question.
So we're sticking with walks, stolen bases, and in this case is hits allowed, not doubles, in World Series plays, but for pitchers. Sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's jalapeno cheddar Cheetos. Crunchy Cheetos.
Dating back to a question from Craig, food question, yep. Got you hooked back.
When I went to make my run to get the I didn't mention this on air. I was running errands today. I got my flu shot. I got prescription, and I was looking for local papers. I got the LA Times. I got the San Gabriel Valley Tribune, which is the sister paper of the LA Daily News and Orange County Register. So I got their sort of Dodgers pennant winning stuff, you know, front page, sports page, that stuff. Then also got La Opinion, but I had to go to like four different places because they didn't have the LA Times. I found a 7-Eleven that had it, but at each one, I was like, I'll just get something. And then I think I got an ice cream sandwich at one spot. I got I got a squirt, which I'm drinking right now. Good times. But this is for pitchers allowed.
Yeah. Walks allowed, stolen bases allowed, and hits allowed in World Series play. LA, again, LA Dodgers.
Walks allowed, hits allowed, stolen bases. So Don Sutton.
I'm just going to give you Don Sutton for all three.
Yeah.
He leads in hits 43. He's tied for second in stolen bases 2. And he's tied for third in walks with someone I won't say yet because you haven't guessed, with 8.
So just because I believe I'm just doing the math here. So 2-3 and
2 stolen bases, 43 walks, 8 walks. 43 hits, 8 walks. Sorry.
I was doing the math in my head of something else. So because I believe Sandy Koufax made 7 World Series starts. So I have to say him for walks.
Tied for second with 11.
And what was the hits total for Sutton?
43.
I have to say Koufax for hits, just because.
Second with 36.
Okay.
These are all pretty good pitchers. What it's worth. This is not a.
What about Drysdale for steals?
Not on steals, no.
Okay. What about Drysdale for walks?
Tied for second with Sandy, 11 each.
Okay. And then. I'm trying to think who got run wild on. I don't remember any of this.
I'll tell you that the leader in walks and stolen bases is the same pitcher with no ties.
No ties. Okay. Wait, walks and stolen bases?
Mm-hmm.
So Kershaw's only made 4 starts, so I don't think it's him. He also had the relief appearance. Okay. I am. It's not like I'm stalling.
No,
right
not
now.
At all.
So Claude Osteen was only around for 65 and 66. So let's see who was around. God, this is frustrating. What about Johnny Padres?
Nope. Nope. I'm gonna give you one more name to guess, and I'll give you blanket coverage. If it appears on this list, I'll tell you.
Okay. I'm trying to think of someone who could have been in that walks and steals. What the hell? I'm out. I don't know.
Bert Hooten leads in walks and stolen bases. Don Drysdale rounds out the hits with 34 allowed. Clayton Kershaw is the other tied with Don Sutton for walks with 8. And then let's see, Charlie Huff and Tim Leary both have 2 stolen bases allowed. Don Drysdale, no, I covered that. There you go.
I should have thought of Hooten. I was trying to think of a guy who was 77, 78, 81, and Hooten just slipped my mind. So yeah, good stuff.
Do either of you remember so many highlight defensive plays from Dodger outfielders in the past postseasons? And I will ask Jacob, do you want to change your favorite Mookie Betts tool to his defense now? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Easy. Simple question. Jacob.
You got the easy question.
This next question, he says it's simple, and I don't think it's so simple. All the World Series games are set to start approximately at 7 Central. Will you watch them live? I don't know. My I hinted at this, and it sounded sort of jokey. It's not super jokey. My anxiety's been really, really unhealthily bad, to the point where Game 4, Kershaw start, where it tends to be the highest. I was not fun to be near, and my mother was visiting from out of town. Like, it wasn't good. Not a good look. Just kind of quiet to myself, not happy. So I don't, that's not fair to me or the people around me. So I haven't decided yet. Adding to that, my mother is no longer here, and 7 was when literally every game starts. And it's also literally when I'm supposed to start my work day after taking care of my kid during the day. So it's going to be complicated, especially on the weekdays. So I don't know. I'll be managing my anxiety somehow. Maybe that involves something I did a little bit during the NLCS, which was effective, is I didn't watch. I would watch the Dodgers bat, but not pitch. That seemed to be a little effective. So we'll see. Regardless, after the game, after result is in, I go back and either rewatch the game. If they didn't do a replay yesterday, which was sort of frustrating, I was ready to stay up till 4 to watch the whole thing.
What are they on, like FS1?
As far as they replayed the post game 2 or 3 times, and then they went to like something about the 2000 World Series. But for the most part, when they after the game's done, I do go back and, you know, do my due diligence, but without the anxiety of everything at stake. So we'll see. I'll be very grateful when the Dodgers just sweep and I feel good again. Last question. As always, food question, but also a World Series question. I know that this week will be a busy time for Eric and Jacob. Very, very correct. Do you have a plan on what and when you will be eating during the upcoming World Series? As an example, sandwiches seem easy, portable, and something you can put down and go back if you get busy, as opposed to something you have to prep for in the kitchen a little bit. I will be eating a lot of sandwiches, and then whatever. I've been making lunches for the most part, and my wife's been making dinners, so probably whatever Melissa makes me.
Yeah, I was bad this last week. I ordered delivery a couple times, and like I just got into a rut, and like it was bad. I didn't grocery shop, so I was like in that dangerous zone of like, well, there's nothing really here. I should probably go buy something, and that's usually bad. But yeah, I think I will need to go at some point either later today or at some point Tuesday to get sandwichy type things or like a something I can quickly go to as a thing. I do have some ground beef that is thawing in the fridge, so I would imagine I might make some quick tacos or something for Tuesday as a placeholder. But yeah, I think it's short and sweet types. Stuff that doesn't take a long time to like pay attention to when cooking, and you can just grab or like an easy thing to put together like a sandwich. And I think I'll be sticking to that stuff this week.
Yeah, easy stuff. I'll go back to more full fledged meals when I don't have this giant thing going on at night, which will be all done at the latest a week from Wednesday.
When you say giant thing, do you mean your daughter? Her sleep schedule and
well, that's not going away, but the World Series is.
I thought you were training her on a proper sleep schedule, and she's just going to be like, "Oh, I'm fine, I'm good now."
Well, this is the last time we're talking about games ahead of us.
Whoa,
that's weird.
Maybe like, yeah, who's to say we might come on with a quick like, can you believe what happened in game two? Like, no, I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. But, yeah, we'll – wow. The Dodgers, they were down 3-1 in that series, and it's crazy how that can turn around. They won the pennant. They're about to play in the World Series. We will talk to you soon. Either, again, well, most likely the Dodgers season will be over. And it's just a matter of will it be over in the good way or in the bad way? Will it be over in the sense that most of you listening will be having a merchandising budget where you're buying caricature shirts or hats with logos on them that you'll be wearing for years to come. We'll see. But yeah, it should be fun. And thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you after the World Series.